ओम ज्ञानतिमिगन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Texts 15 and 16, translation by Nirmalanda A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Well, the last class I gave was in Bombay 2 days ago. Right behind me there was a sound of tap, tap, tap from padding flowers. And I noted how Prabhupada, he didn't like vegetables being padded in class. He didn't like the disturbance of the noise, and he didn't like that devotees should not be concentrating on hearing. He should be doing something else.
So,
you can do whatever you like, but personally I prefer that cut, cut, cut doesn't go on through the class. So, only 16, verse number 16 is written on the board, therefore I'll read verse number 15. And then we'll get into responsive chanting of text number 16. This response from Arjuna is typical, as might be expected from a Kshatriya. Arjuna is a pure devotee of Krishna. Sarvopadivinirmuktam tattvaratvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchate. Bhakti, this particular definition of bhakti, commonly quoted, begins by stating that one who is in pure devotional service is beyond all their mundane designations. Nevertheless, pure devotees of the world, when they come in this world, they play particular roles in this world that are apposite to this world. Apposite or apt, appropriate, that's the right word. Even the Supreme Lord himself, Krishna, plays first of all like a Vaishya's son and then like a Kshatriya's son. And he plays that role exactly. So when a great wrong was done to Arjuna's wife and to himself, he immediately vowed terrible revenge. If a brahmana was in such a circumstance, an ideal brahmana might be inclined to forgive and take a wholly philosophical outlook and say, well, it must be something according to the desire of the Lord. A few years ago, some devotees I know, they were driving in the area of... No, there are different stories. I'm getting mixed up. All right. Some devotees are out on a pilgrimage in a bus and they near Govardhan, and they killed a child belonging to a local family. The bus in an accident killed. I mean, they didn't get out and surround a child and kill it. Just to make it clear, you have to be careful. So the parents of the child that was killed were completely unaffected, at least externally. And they said, well, it's the will of Govardhan. Govardhan gave us this child, now he has taken him away. So there's no... they weren't angry, or they didn't burn the bus down as might have been expected. It's a normal thing that would be done in India. A Vaishya, or in such a circumstance, if they were wrong like this, they would appeal to the king to protect them, or for the king to take revenge. But Arjuna, being in the role of a king himself, vowed terrible revenge against Ashwatthama. Now, there is a dilemma here. We'll find, especially in Mahabharata, it's full of various dharma sankat. It means dilemmas concerning dharma. Because dharma means, what dharma means is a very big topic and often difficult to define, but basically we can say dharma means the laws of the universe. Everyone is enjoined to act according to the dharma. And the laws are given in the dharma shastras. And therefore one should act according to the dharma shastras and not go against them. However, sometimes there is this dilemma, dharma sankat, in which one law... By acting in a certain way, one will act according to one law but break another one. and so you're not sure what to do. So what is the dharma sankat or dilemma in this situation? Who can say?
Brahmin should not be killed.
Brahmin should not be killed, okay, but that's only one statement. Have a dilemma, you have to have, or a paradox, you have to have two statements which are...
Ashwatthama Brahma, Brahman for Rasdina, no...
Yeah, Ashwatthama was a Brahmin, alright.
Arjuna говорит, что он его убьет.
And Arjuna says that he would kill him.
Alright, yeah. And, well, as stated in the purport, and okay, you can translate that. As stated in the purport, an aggressor, certain types of aggressors are to be killed. So, Ashwatthama falls into the category of one who was attacked with deadly weapons. And specifically, he killed the sons of Draupadi when they were sleeping, which is completely against the rules of dharma.
Could do such a thing?
I mean, even recently, in all over the world, there were accepted norms of fighting. There was a time, not so long ago, when soldiers didn't charge into villages and kill every woman and child. They'd only fight, men would fight men in a certain area, and they wouldn't attack villages or any such thing. In the present Kali Yuga, the idea of laying waste to villages of people who are not directly concerned with the fighting, if this will be a good one for all those who hate America, it was introduced in the American Civil War.
Laying waste means?
Hmm?
Laying waste means?
Laying waste means to destroy it.
Mm.
And nowadays it's just considered normal just like Hiroshima and Nagasaki, you just bomb a whole bunch of people who are not directly involved in the fighting, and that's considered part of warfare. And nowadays we have the scepter of terrorism, which is well known all over the world.
Scepter?
It means like a post or a...
Oh.
You don't see it, but all of a sudden it attacks you. You don't know where it comes from. But until recently there were rules of fighting that even in the Western world you didn't attack someone who was sleeping. If someone surrendered, you had to protect them. You didn't kill them.
Mm-hmm.
All these things gradually faded out with mechanized warfare. Anyway, Ashwatthama is an aggressor, and he is clearly, according to the rules of dharma, not only is it allowed to kill him, but he actually should be killed. Not to kill him would be against the laws of dharma. On the other hand, he is a Brahmin of sorts. Do you know what that means, of sorts?
Kind
of. Yeah. Just like his father was a Brahmin of sorts. Of course, there's a great difference between the father of Ashwatthama, who's called...
Drona.
Okay, very good. And Ashwatthama. The difference is that Dronacharya was actually a very principled and high-minded person. Whereas Ashwatthama is... his only claim to be a Brahmin is that he's the son of Dronacharya. But neither in his activities and definitely not in his principles is he anything like a Brahmana. Nevertheless, there are very stringent warnings against acting in any way against Brahmanas, even speaking rudely to them, what to speak of killing them. And it's very clear that at the time of the Kurukshetra war, caste was defined by birth. We'll find it definitely throughout the whole history of the Pandavas. I mean, none of us would be accepted as Brahmins. In fact, even until recently, when Srila Prabhupada came with his followers from the Western countries to India, then no one accepted the no one would accept them as Brahmins. Some accepted them as Vaishnavas. But socially, they didn't consider them Brahmana. So Ashwatthama, because of his birth, which is often considered the overriding factor, he was a Brahmana who is never to be killed. killing brahmanas is for famous figures in the Puranas like Hiranyakashipu and Kamsa. Killing brahmanas is for famous figures in the Puranas. Infamous. On the other hand, someone who's been horribly aggressive and acting wholly against the principles of Dharma, they should be killed. They should be killed to protect society from such people, because you know, it's just like a serial killer.
He has to be
apprehended. He's a danger to human. His freedom should be curtailed. He shouldn't be free to go on killing people. And he should be killed for his own sake, otherwise he'll have to suffer. By being killed in a dharmic manner, he is free from the reactions of his sins, whereas if he's not killed, then he'll have to suffer terribly for those sins after his death. In the modern age, in the hyper-liberal outlook being vigorously promoted all over the world by the dying Western civilization, that's the first part of the sentence, there is very strong, there's a very strong move to ban capital punishment all over the world. This is based on ignorance, because they think that, well, you only live once, so if you kill someone, well, that's too much. That's too much punishment for anything. But they don't know the laws of karma, that you have to suffer more. Someone who's sinned grievously, such as a murderer, they have to suffer more by not being subjected to capital punishment. They have to suffer more in future life. Such grave punishment, well, it gives a warning to others who might be take advantage of such a liberal atmosphere. Just like in Russia in the early 1980s, when the oppressive political system broke down, then immediately just like we're talking about the bugs coming out of the cracks, all the criminals and the mafia got busy. Late 1980s. So the pre-perestroika Russia was too oppressive. They suppressed everything, pretty much. But then the post-perestroika, it's too liberal, because the criminals, they can move very freely. So you may think, well, you know, why am I talking in this class about all these things? Why am I not talking about Krishna dancing with the gopis? Well, Srila Prabhupada himself spoke very much on social issues, because he saw the world as a mess and he wanted to give guidance to the world to put it back in order. And actually Srila Prabhupada, he spoke like 99% to 1%. Practically, you can say, about the what is needed for reforming human society by Krishna consciousness, rather than just talking all kinds of pastimes and this and that, for the Srila Prabhupada was a very practical acharya. He had practical plans to apply the principles of Shastra to human society. So anyway, at the present time, there's so much discussions about freedom and human rights, and the United Nations has listed several principles of human rights which they consider axiomatic, which are derived from the principles that became prominent in the time of the French Revolution and then the American Revolution. Was it Jefferson made the Constitution, and he said we consider these principles, what is it, inviolable or something like this? They're just axiomatic. With the idea that all human beings are equal, and that they all should have equal human rights. And communism was based on the same idea. And theoretically, capitalism, although it doesn't have a fixed philosophy, or consumerism, it's all based on the same idea. Everyone has the same right to get in there and work hard and make lots of money and spend it. And if you're stupid or you don't work hard, then you're exploited. So Srila Prabhupada, when he was referred to human rights, he would usually say, well, why only the humans? What about the animals? They're talking so much about human rights, but they're torturing and killing literally millions of animals every day. Another angle is that it's actually nonsense to say that all human beings are equal when no two human beings are equal in any way whatsoever. Now there's going to be the Olympic Games. Da, 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 da. Well, if everyone was equal, there'd be no Olympic Games. And someone runs faster than someone else and gets the gold medal, they say, hey, that's a violation of human rights. You can't be better than him. But based on this, of course, this is all very controversial topics because it's considered like to say that all living beings are not equal. It's people think you're becoming like Hitler or something like that. But I mean, practically speaking, we do see that some races are more in general, the members of certain races are more intelligent than others. Although, I could probably be put in prison in America for saying that. really. I mean, why were the Jews hated all over Europe? And equal rights for Russia? Russia wasn't behind in this regard whatsoever, because they were, downside more, together and intelligent than the other people, and they managed to control to a large extent the economy. They were good at making money. They were intelligent. Were and are. Zionism. By the way, this is not a Jewish nose. It might look like one, but I'm trying to speak in a philosophical, neutral manner here. I'm not flying the Zionist flag, the five... What is it? The five?
Six.
Is it five? Six.
Six, okay.
Six-pointed star. Men and women are equal. That's another one. If you say anything opposite to that, you could also end up in a prison in America. Of course, they put you in a man's prison. They don't have mixed prisons. I don't think so, not yet. You might also get thrown out of this one. But Srila Prabhupada would point out that if men and women are equal, then why is the woman always having the baby and not the man? That he pointed out that the woman has the child and then she becomes dependent on the man. A feminist journalist who Prabhupada was made this proposition to said, no, you don't have to have a man, you can get money from the government. Prabhupada said, well, that's also not good. The point is, you become dependent. So in this way, Prabhupada would point out so many defects in modern society which have arisen because of improper understanding of the principles of human interaction. The average person raised with a liberal education in the West might think that this story of they're going to kill Ashwatthama. I think, well, that's not proper. They should, first of all, they should give him a trial, which goes on for 15 years and like this. But it's obvious he was the one who killed the children, and actually so many others. Ashwatthama killed many, many people in their sleep. And there's no need of any trial. It's quite obvious that he is sinful. A few years ago in Moscow, there was some terrorists took over a cinema hall, was it? In Moscow?
Not cinema, but...
Musical.
Yeah. And Gospodin Putin took charge of the situation. And they drugged everyone, put them to sleep, and then they went in and they just killed them all. So, according to the modern idea, they should have had a trial, but it's damn obvious, you know, they're terrorists and they got what they deserved. So, it may seem very horrible, but when people do horrible things, then they have to be dealt with tit for tat. Srila Prabhupada noted that in Kashmir, up until recent times, the crime rate was practically zero, because the king, he acted according to Vedic principles. If anyone was caught stealing, then they'd chop off their hands, and then it would be pretty difficult to steal after that, and others also wouldn't be very enthusiastic for stealing. So instead of treating all people equally, one should treat them according to their particular situation. That is a better application of human rights. Another thing all over the world they have nowadays is that children must all go to school and study. Prabhupada wasn't for this. No. What's the point of sending people to study all these things when they're just going to do some unskilled job? No point. So the old system that the barber's son becomes a barber, he doesn't have to study trigonometry to become a barber. He doesn't have to study Tolstoy or any such thing. Yeah, just become a barber, a potter, a farmer. You don't need any education more than your father can give you in a few days. The tabloid newspapers business, which is most of the newspapers in the world are tabloids, they cater to people who are educated but who are not intellectuals. They're not interested in higher knowledge. They're just shudras. The tabloid newspapers are characterized by sensationalism, sex, and sport. These are the three things. And they give lots of news about, you know, every time some film star farts, it becomes big news in the newspaper, in the tabloid. So it doesn't mean that by giving education to everyone, that everyone becomes cultured. They just become more sophisticatedly stupid, that's all. So for the Shudra class, there is Mahabharata. Shudra Dvija Bandhu Nam Tri Na Veda Gocha. I didn't say the first one because you're not supposed to these days. There are three classes of people who are not fit for hearing the Vedas. So for them, didactic instruction is given by the means of the stories in Mahabharata, which actually raise the Shudras to a higher level of consciousness and helps even people who otherwise would be interested in the farting of film stars. They can actually be raised to a higher level of consciousness. So, this section of Bhagavatam is practically a continuation of the Mahabharata, and it is concerned with yet another dharma sankat, which is apart from the storyline of the Mahabharata, the whole substance is one dharma sankat after another, or it's a dilemma of dharma. The most famous one in the Mahabharata, and the classic one, is which one? Srila and Gaudiya has suggested what else? The game, the gambling. Well, I was going to say it. Translate that. Well, I was going to say it's Arjuna's dilemma on which basis the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, whether or not to fight. Here we have again, after the battle, Krishna, Arjuna, and the subject matter of fighting. And this time Arjuna, he didn't have any doubt. He said, I'm going to get there, I'm going to get that Ashwatthama, I'm going to give you a gift, he said to Draupadi, of Ashwatthama's head. And, but later, Yudhishthira and Draupadi, they weren't so. When Ashwatthama was captured, we'll find that Yudhishthira, especially, and Draupadi, they were not so. You know, they didn't actually want to kill Ashwatthama. Even though he is fallen, there's no doubt, he's a rascal. But he is the son of our guru. And Draupadi is saying, I'm lamenting because I lost my sons, but our guru's wife, whose name is?
Kripi,
very good. She's lamenting because she's lost her husband, and now she'll have to, if we kill Ashvatthama, she'll have to lament because she lost her son also. So it's not proper to do that. Out of respect for Dronacharya, we should not kill Ashvatthama. And predictably, Bhima, he wanted to kill Ashvatthama. Bhima was always very aggressive, and Yudhishthira tended to be more of a pacifist. And Arjuna, you could say, he was somewhere in between. So he was, even though he wasn't sure, he vowed to Draupadi to kill Ashvatthama, but then Draupadi herself was saying, no, don't kill him. So what to do? It becomes a... You know, whatever you do, it's very difficult to say what's exactly the right thing according to dharma to do. Well, luckily, dharma personified was present. Dharma is usually the name given to Yamaraj, but when I said that dharma personified was present, I was referring to Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he brilliantly solved the problem. As well as you can, because in this material world there's no real solution to any problem other than going back to Godhead. Of course, everything ordained by Krishna is perfect, but this material world isn't perfect. So you might say, well, the Varnashram system is perfect because it's given by Krishna. But from that perspective, it's perfect. But then it tends to be misused by men, and then it becomes imperfect, or the application of it becomes imperfect. So anyway, there are very deep underlying principles which are to be understood, and they can be understood by discussing in the assembly of thoughtful persons of character. Unfortunately, the whole modern world, including India, is completely divorced from the principles of dharma. Therefore, the whole world is a mess. Srila Prabhupada wanted to restore a good level of sanity to the world by reintroducing Vedic culture. So it's very important for the members of ISKCON, if we actually want to fulfill Srila Prabhupada's mandate of spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, we should do it in the way that he enjoined us to do so. And understand these principles of Vedic culture as presented to us by Srila Prabhupada. It's very deep and it's very broad, but it's based on the principle that human life is meant for God realization. Vedic culture is based on that, on the principle that everything should be done, everything in human society should be done ultimately for the sake of self-realization, leading toward that. Dharmasya hi apavargasya nartho thaya pakalpate. Now, thaya dharma, what is that? What's the sound of it? Nartaya dharma.
Kantasya.
Dharmai kantasya. What is that then? Karma hi svataha. Let me see. That, dharma is not meant for. See, normally you say dharma, artha, kama, and maybe moksha. Usually it's considered dharma, artha, kama. These are the trivarga, the three goals of human life. Dharma, or living a righteous life, is meant so that we can live in this world and enjoy it in a good way. That's the general misunderstanding, which is systematically propagated by the Mimamsakas. But
Kama
Mimamsa. Real Mimamsakas are Vaishnava. Srimad Bhagavatam gives a completely different perspective on Vedic knowledge than that which is usually understood. These words, dharmasya hi apavargasya. It gives a completely different outlook on dharma to that which is normally considered. If dharma is meant for ultimate liberation, one should not consider sense gratification the goal of life. Even very pious sense gratification. One principle of the modern humanistic outlook is that, well, everyone should be free to enjoy themselves as much as possible, as long as it doesn't harm others. This is like considered the sacred underlying rule of modern agnostic humanism. So this sounds like the perfection of social philosophy, doesn't it? But it is flawed by terrible ignorance. Because as long as we do not act in Krishna consciousness, then every single thing we do is harmful to ourselves and every other living being in the universe. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that the neophyte devotee, who's not even a preacher, he's just ringing the bell in the temple during the arati, that his every striking of the bell is more valuable to human society than opening millions of hospitals, schools, feeding the poor centers, and so on. I mean, they were, what's the benefit to human society of ringing the bell? Usually only hear complaints that it's disturbing us. But because it is meant for the praise of Krishna, it is of ultimate value. When the neophyte devotee doesn't have any clear knowledge of who Krishna is or why he should be praising him, but still, because it's connected with Krishna in a positive way, then it's more valuable than simply catering to the needs of the body. All right, that's the end of this lecture, unless there are any more questions. Comments? All right.
Education means probably may not possess proper qualities to absorb or to understand the great volume of knowledge.
This is an objection made to the idea that to what? What's this in?
Attend the classes.
What's this in relationship to?
Can you comment on this?
On this proposition?
Yeah.
Well, you may not be fully qualified to be parents also. Does that mean everyone should stop having children? The child does something wrong and the parent says, don't do that. Now, should you say that the parent has to be completely faultless and never makes any fault in his life before he can tell his child what is right and what is wrong? This is a very wise proposition. A devotee who knows that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead is far more... His education is of far more value than that of all the university professors in the world who don't accept this. Now it's true also that in the modern world that there are an increasing number and a disproportionate number of people who are mentally disturbed in various ways. And I haven't done a sociological survey, but it appears that a disproportionate number of mentally disturbed people take to Krishna consciousness. I might be wrong, because, you know, many times the mentally disturbed people, you don't know they're mentally disturbed, because it's all going on quietly. But it's not surprising if disturbed people take to Krishna consciousness, because Lord Krishna mentions the distressed people as the first category among four of persons who take to Krishna consciousness. And it obviously is not a tall or good idea to put in to give the role of teachers to persons who are not psychologically stable. And in fact making exactly that mistake has caused tremendous difficulty with our movement, as you are all probably aware. In the modern age, being a teacher is far more difficult than previously, because the children are all, by the time the children get to school at the age of five or whatever, they're already mostly, you know, they're mentally disturbed themselves, or, you know, highly uncivilized. One of my disciples in India a few years ago, she was She has a degree in psychology, and she was appointed as a psychologist in the school. She found that all the teachers and all the pupils were suffering from either depression, anxiety, hypertension, hyperactivity, and they're all disturbed, every single one of them. Yeah, in the school there, they turned out 12, 13-year-old kids. Yeah, what is it? Depression, anxiety, hypertension, hyperactivity, all these kinds of things. I don't know if they're words in Russian, they probably are. So it is a great challenge to make brahmanas who are competent to take the roles of teachers and leaders of society. And it's such a great challenge that we might think, well, when we're not capable of living up to that challenge, so we might as well send our kids to the karmi schools where, you know, they seem to be making a fairly uniform job of turning out kids who at least can fit into the modern insane society. Kind of, they're insane in a, you know, they turn out people who are insane in the normal kind of way, so they're considered not insane, because they're insane in the normal way. It's like it's considered, you know, quite normal for any average Russian citizen to drink a lot of alcohol, go out screaming into the street, maybe beat someone or get beaten by someone else, urinate all over the place and fall down unconscious. And it's considered normal. And in fact, the late, lamented, what was his name? The guy previous to Putin?
Yeltsin.
he even turned up on an official visit to a country and didn't come out of his plane because he was unconscious from being drunk. So, I mean, this is actually, if we try to consider it in a neutral, objective kind of way, this is subhuman behavior, actually. So now, there's no doubt that it's very difficult to try to establish human society, what to speak of brahminical society. We can give this much credit to modern society that at least they have some kind of systematic insanity. It's not totally chaotic insanity. At the present time it hasn't broken down into chaotic insanity. So it's a great challenge to establish brahminical society, and we may think it was too great a challenge, but we shouldn't shy away from the challenge. Because really it's the only hope for human society, is the teachings of Krishna consciousness as given to us by Srila Prabhupada. And we will get his mercy, and despite our considerable lack of qualification, which is a great understatement, then by his mercy, if we are sincere and we persevere, then we should be able to, by his grace, achieve a great change in human society. Positive change. It really is the only hope for human society, and therefore we should take it damn serious. So this is Srila Prabhupada's books. As Srila Prabhupada always emphasized, this is the only hope for human society. This is the most important part of preaching Krishna consciousness. Please go on with it. Even if you're half insane or three quarters insane or whatever, if you can get out and distribute Prabhupada's books, it will be a great service to human society. Yes, anything else, please?
Sure.
Yes.
Please.
Do we have this extra mic? Alright, please write it down. Okay, give this then. Alright, well, if you can hear, I guess there's good hope that those sitting in the shelter of the lotus feet of Gornitai can also hear. It's only about 20% more distance.
There's a question based on this book, Beginner's Guide.
That's only an introductory book. I have to write a big book about gurus and disciples. Mm-hmm. It's a big topic. Jiva Goswami says that Shiva Tattva and Guru Tattva are very difficult to understand. What are two things that Shiva and Guru have in common? That's true, but that was not the one I was thinking of.
Okay. On the net
Yeah, they're both in one in a very important way non-different from Krishna, more non-different than others, but at the same time they're not Krishna. So it's anyway, what's your question?
You mentioned that any disciple of Srila Prabhupada who is staying in spiritual life can become a spiritual master.
He is a spiritual master just by every Vaishnava is a guru by that qualification alone, ipso facto. You are a guru whether or not you accept formal disciples. Mm-hmm. A disciple of a disciple of Srila Prabhupada, or a disciple of a disciple of a disciple of Prabhupada. Jai Krishna Tattva Vita Shri Guru Hare.
Sorry, questions?
Translation.
You mean the.
Yeah, I was saying that a disciple of a disciple of Srila Prabhupada.
Oh, that's translated.
Yeah, okay. And then Jai Krishna Tattva Vita Shri Guru Hare.
You mentioned that in the book it is said that for a long time such a devotee followed the principles of sadhana bhakti, chanted his rounds, etc. So why it is mentioned that he followed in the past tense? It means that once he became a spiritual master, he didn't follow it all. Why it is in the past tense?
Where's the English version?
I'm just going to use it.
Well, I mean, apart from why it's written in the book, we may ask the question, why are there living representatives of the past tense living in this world today who fit this description? It is a difficult question, no doubt. A devotee is enjoined to see his guru as non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. On the other hand, there is clearly a difference between great acharyas like Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Bhaktisthan Sarasvati Thakur, and various of their humble servants who are carrying their message and mission forward, who are performing the same role, but at the same time, you know, not every bird is Garuda, not every fish is Matsya Avatar. So without in any way denigrating the devotees who are performing the service within this difficult material world of instructing and guiding others according to Vaishnava principles, at the same time, we should understand that some devotees are special representatives of Krishna, come from the spiritual world, and not everyone's on that very high, exceptionally exalted platform. I'm not sure if that answered your question, because I'm not exactly sure what the question was in the first place, but I got the general gist of it. What does it say in English? All right, check it. You can go and check it against the English. But this is, by the way, this is an edited version, so the translation is based on an old version. Hey, wait a minute, Sadashiv. This is edited, actually. This is an edit. Dravida Prabhu edited it and tried to make it like more modern English or more suitable for. So there may be a difference anyway in such subtle. In this book, in the first edition, I wrote it in. You can tell exactly what the case is. More like a neutral sense that one should do this. But in this edition, Dravida Prabhu has changed everything to you should do this. It's more imperative rather than. So linguistic questions, they may seem technical, but they can be extremely important. Thought and philosophy, thought and therefore necessarily philosophy, are conveyed through language. So it's a whole branch of philosophy itself, how meanings ascribed to words, how words acquire meanings, how words change their meanings. It's far too big a topic to get into now. Yeah, we have lots of questions here. So
you mentioned that killing of aggressor is beneficial for him.
Yes.
So the question is if the aggressor.
Okay, well, blame Gunadhan. But on the other hand, the translator has to translate according to the need of his language, which will be different. Two languages can never be the same unless they're very close languages. Sometimes if you give a little literal translation, the actual intended meaning will not be conveyed as well as if you explain it somewhat differently. That's just the nature of languages. That's why it's actually important that at least some devotees in our movement understand Sanskrit, because everything Srila Prabhupada is presenting is coming from philosophy that was originally expounded in Sanskrit. So if anything's due to the inadequacies of English language or the inadequacy of ourselves in understanding Srila Prabhupada's intention, it can be helpful and maybe necessary sometimes to consult the original Sanskrit, which Prabhupada is translating.
So the deep aggressor can realize that he committed a sinful activity and he can become a devotee of the Lord even in this life. How can we what try to do? We have to take this opportunity from him. We don't know the plan of Krishna. The punishment is done by the people, by common people who can be mistaken, but we cannot return
the life.
The life to the person. And thus, maybe in Kali Yuga, the corporal punishment should not be done.
Corporal punishment or capital punishment?
Capital.
Yeah. Okay. Excuse me. Well, we can't know the plan of Krishna. We can know the plan of Krishna in as much as he presents it in Shastra. And according to Krishna's plan for human society, an aggressor of, not every aggressor, but an aggressor of these categories who are given here, they should be killed. A common man may be wrong. Yeah, that's true. Therefore, the king and the brahmanas who guide him should be not common men, but persons conversant with and living on the platform of dharma. And actually, it's a fact that persons who live in concord with dharma, with controlled senses, then they actually they don't make mistakes. They get spiritual power. That someone might become a devotee later on, that's always possible, but in Krishna's law system, in the law system given by Krishna, it's understood that in general, most people who perform such horrible acts they're not going to become, they're very sinful, they're going to suffer greatly in future if they're not punished in this way, and therefore they should be killed. Now, if everyone who is a criminal, they said, okay, I'm now going to become a devotee, then we get lots of insincere devotees. So maybe it's better, even if they are prepared to become a devotee, they shouldn't not to plead that, well, now I'm a devotee, so you should let me go. Rather, if they're a devotee, they might say, all right, I'm a devotee, and I've sinned, and I accept the reaction. Tattenu kambansu samikshavano bhunjana evatma kritam vipakam vidvarva bhuvivadatam namaste jiveta yo muktivade sadaya bhak. The import of this verse is that the devotee thinks, I have to suffer because of my sinful reactions. Anyway, I'll go on chanting Hare Krishna. I have sinned, therefore let me accept the reaction for that without claiming, divine dispensation. But anyway, I'll go on serving Krishna. So definitely we need qualified kings and brahmanas, but again we can't. On one hand, we don't want, you know, like highly mentally disturbed people in charge of countries, as was the case in the 1970s with Idi Amin in Uganda. Us old men, we know all these things. He used to like eat his political adversaries. I mean, not a fish. He used to eat his political adversaries. That was, you know, after he'd killed them. He didn't eat them alive. So, of course, the way he killed them wasn't the most pleasant also. But on the other hand, we can't throw out all the principles of human governance, because we can say, well, no one's qualified to govern, therefore no one should be any governor. No one's qualified to be parents, therefore no one should have children. No one's qualified to chant Hare Krishna, so we should all not help. No one's qualified to understand Prabhupada's books, so we should stop book distribution. None of these arguments are acceptable. Many of the things that Srila Prabhupada promoted for human society, in fact, practically everything, goes against the outlook and the sensibilities of modern man. These books are revolutionary in the dictionary sense. They recommend a total reconstruction of human society based on completely different principles to those, to any of any, you know, communism, capitalism, fascism, whatever kind of systems may be going on all over the world. Completely different outlook. Anyway, if Krishna allows me, I very much want to write books systematically explaining all these points. Just like I made this beginner's guide to Krishna consciousness, just things that Prabhupada taught us, but put them all in one place. Brahmacharya and Krishna consciousness, it's all things that Prabhupada taught us, but put it all together systematically. And this is required. Prabhupada's books, there's so much valuable things for human society, and Prabhupada wanted his disciples to write more books, and so, if you all bless me, if I stop running around all over the world, I could sit down more and write about these things. So it's much easier to speak than write. Yeah, please. I didn't do anything yet, so
okay,
I'll say Hari Bol when I do something.
I wanted to thank you.
You want to say a word of praise, then next question?
Yeah. Actually, this book helped me a lot in my spiritual life, but I just had one doubt, so now this doubt was dissipated. So I'm very thankful for it. You did very quickly. So I'm very thankful to you for the book and everything.
Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna. Hey. I actually have many, many important books to write. Like everyone else, I'm getting older every moment. Once you hit 50, then you become more aware of the tick, 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 tick. My life is going away. My great friend Suhotra Swami, the last book that he wrote, I told him I very much appreciated that book. And he told me, well, actually the real books that I want to write, I haven't written them yet. And then, he's gone. And he didn't write the books which he wanted to write.
So
Krishna had some other plan. So I also thought, I didn't write the books I want to write either. Tick, 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 tick. Ayo harati vaipum sanudyan astan chayana sotasyate yakshano nita uttama shloka vartaya. What's the translation of this verse? Tick, tick. Except for those who engage in uttama shloka varta, discussion of Krishna, who is described in the best verses. So, yeah, time is going away.